Welcome into the Just Above Average podcast. I am your host, Dominic. This is episode number 6, which means we are 6 weeks in. Thank you all for sticking around this long. And if you're new to the podcast, welcome, welcome, welcome. This episode of the pod, we're going to talk a little bit about the final presidential debate. Tanking for Trevor now instead of tanking for Tua. Talk a little bit about how Tua's taken over the Dolphins. And we're just going to have a bunch of little quick hitters about good government, elections, and just running the government in general. So this is the 6th episode of Just Above Average Podcast. So let's get going here on the Just Above Average Podcast quick hitter topics here. I've kind of got 4 quick little hits that I want to get into before we jump into the main topics. The first being the Republicans whose comments have leaked over the past couple weeks that are critical of Trump and his administration. I think it's a bunch of baloney that they will say these things to their fundraisers and private meetings, and only by the grace of being recorded are these comments out there, because I think you should have the gumption and the guts to stand up in public for what you believe. And I'm going to play some comments here from Republican Senator Ben Sasse from Nebraska, formerly known as a pretty serious conservative voice, not just a bomb thrower who is looking to, I don't know, be a TV host or whatever, but these are some of his comments that have leaked out in the past week. I'm going to play them here.
I mean, the way he ignores that the Uyghurs are in literal concentration camps in Xinjiang right now. He hasn't lifted a finger on behalf of the Hong Kongers. I mean, he and I have a very different foreign policy. It isn't just that he fails to lead our allies. It's that the United States now regularly sells out our allies under his leadership. The way he treats women and spends like a drunken sailor, the ways I criticize President Obama for that kind of spending, I criticize President Trump for as well. He mocks evangelicals behind closed doors. His family has treated the presidency like a business opportunity. He's flirted with white supremacists.
So if you wanted to know what Republican legislators in the Capitol actually think of Trump, you kind of see that from some of the comments there from Ben Sasse, Nebraska senator. I just think it's a bunch of baloney that he won't say that in public, because he got real silent when there was the prospect of a primary challenge from a Trumper there in the state of Nebraska. But the fact that it leaks out is somewhat a good thing, I guess, because then people actually know what the legislators are thinking and where they're at. But I just think it's a bunch of BS that they won't come out and say it in public. The second topic here, real quick hitter. Trump this week signed a executive order that changes the way civil service employees are scheduled and classified. This is terrible news for anyone who doesn't want the bureaucracy to be politicized even more than it already is. These are the people who their jobs aren't political in nature. These are the people who just make sure our government runs well and efficiently and get things done, do the job that they're supposed to do. What his executive order did was basically change them from civil service to more of a political appointee, and anyone who has been inside government or civil service is screaming about how this is a bad idea, but unfortunately it doesn't reach the front page of the news or the nightly news on TV, because it's not a sexy topic. But stupid move. There's just a bunch of things that he has done that have absolutely wrecked our government and how it operates, and that will be one of the big things that the next president will have to clean up. Next topic, real quick, I am going to give a shout out and some claps to the left wing politicians out there, Bernie and AOC, throughout this campaign for president of the United States. The Republicans have tried to paint Joe Biden as a leftist or too liberal, however you want to say it. But to their credit, the left wing AOC and squad, Bernie, et cetera, they have learned how to shut the fuck up. And when it comes time to come out and write a think piece or give an interview about how Biden isn't far left enough, yeah, that's what they've done. So it really, I think they're genuine in their criticism too of Biden, but it does really help him clamp down on his claim to the middle, to the moderate centrist lane. But I think it's just funny how they may not love Joe Biden, but their criticism of him actually helps him in this case. The final quick hitter topic I want to hit on, because over years and years and years and years, we always see this stupid thing pop up. It says, man, we need term limits, term limits, term limits. Term limits are fucking stupid. They are bad for good government. They drain institutional knowledge, and term limits actually give more power to lobbyists and special interests. Most legislators, especially at the state level, don't have a frickin' clue about what they're doing, about how to pass bills and get bills through committee and what has to pass constitutional muster. So they turn to lobbyists who write bills for them, and then after a couple of years, when they term out, a new person comes in and says, man, I don't know what's going on. And then that same lobbyist who is there throughout all these times in Jefferson City or the Capitol or wherever, they come in with the bill that they want for their organization and their special interest, because a lot of these legislators don't know what the fuck they're doing. Say it with me once again. Term limits are bad. Term limits are bad. Term limits are bad. If you take nothing else from this podcast or this entire series, please learn term limits are not good governance. Term limits actually promote lobbyists and special interests. The thing that you think you're taking away when you add term limits, you're actually giving them more power and more influence. So please, if you ever have a chance to get rid of term limits, especially in the legislature, please do it. If somebody brings it up and says, man, that's a reason to vote for that guy, he won't be in there, that same person will stay in and be a lifer. And if they're not a lifer, they'll cash out and become a lobbyist and make a whole bunch of money from it. All right, term limits are bad. Anybody who's advocating them is either stupid or has ulterior motives. That's it. Do not support term limits. They are bad. So let's jump now over to the world of sports and the tanking for Trevor conversation, or what was previously tanking for Tua. The Dolphins seem to have won that because they now have Tua Tagovailoa. They have recently this week just announced that he will be their starter going forward. Ryan Fitzpatrick, the previous starter, came out and said he was basically blindsided by it. And I think he was, probably, because the Dolphins have been playing really well. They had a really tough schedule the first couple weeks, and Fitzmagic has brought them to a 3-3 record, playing really well. Tua got some garbage time last week, so it wasn't like this was totally off the wall, but you definitely feel for Ryan Fitzpatrick. He had a press conference. You could see it in his body language and his voice. He was just heartbroken over the whole thing. But, yeah, so Tua will be quarterbacking the Dolphins this week, which kind of leads us to the tanking conversation, tanking for Trevor. Trevor Lawrence, that is, this time around. Clemson quarterback, a national champion. The greatest thing since sliced bread. No joke. He is Mel Kiper's best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck, which is very high praise. Everybody knows who Andrew Luck was coming out of Stanford, how high his draft stock was, and they think Trevor Lawrence might even be better. So we'll see where Trevor goes. The Jets are in the prime position right now. They have Sam Darnold still, which opens up the possibility of trade talks. I don't know where Darnold might go if they tried to trade or if they hold on to Darnold, but still too early in the season to really make any true predictions, because while the Jets are winless, there's only a handful of teams who have only one win. Talking about the Vikings, Giants, Washington football team, among others. So certainly not a done deal, because all it takes is one win and you could move five spots down in the draft. So we'll kind of save that for a future episode, but it is interesting to see how tanking for X player goes, because right now Tua, who was drafted in the top five, but not number one overall, or even number two or three, is with the Dolphins. So we'll have a chance to see what he is all about. Let's fit in an ad break here on the Just Above Average podcast. Welcome back to the Just Above Average podcast. I am your host, Dominic. The final and main topic that we're going to get to today is the final debate analysis. And at the end, I'm going to sprinkle in a little bit of election night, what to expect. Yesterday was the final presidential debate. I keep saying final because I'm not sure whether to say second or third, because the second debate was canceled slash turned into two dueling town halls. But anyway, Kristen Welker of NBC was the moderator, and pretty much across the board, both sides, pretty much everyone gave her two thumbs up for the way she handled the debate, the questions that she asked. I think a lot of people thought the mute buttons helped. The candidates were both more toned down from the first debate, not so much interruption. More towards the end, you saw a little bit of interrupting and back and forth, but for the most part, it wasn't out of control. The net result, I think, of the night was confirmation bias. If you liked Trump before the debate, you thought he won. If you liked Biden before the debate, you thought Biden won. I looked at three kind of different focus groups that various media groups had. Of course, I like Frank Luntz's group always. His was a pretty obviously pro-Trump leaning crowd coming in. They were all pleased, I guess, by the toned down demeanor of the debate and Donald Trump. CBS and CNN kind of had it the other way. They thought Biden won, which of course isn't surprising. So whichever your source probably thought that candidate won the debate. So I don't know how people are still undecided at this point. If they are truly undecided, we'll get to that in a little bit. I don't really think they are. But as for the debate itself, a lot of it was just stump speech, attacks, and reciting of their policies or what they think about the country. Wasn't too much new information. I think the first topic was COVID, and that's always going to be kind of a negative topic for Trump, given that he is president right now. But yeah, that segment I think Biden came out stronger, and there was a couple back and forths on various things. The one thing that Trump seemed to do throughout the whole debate, and I've said earlier on previous podcasts that this debate format definitely is more his style and his scene. The town hall he had with NBC was not, because he doesn't have anybody to go at this time around. He did have Joe Biden. He did not go after the moderator, somewhat surprisingly, I guess. But yeah, so this format is more his ballpark. I had some friends ask if they thought that, or that if I thought that Biden's answer on oil was going to kill him in Pennsylvania, and I said no. We'll get to that in a little bit as well. But overall, it was a back and forth affair, pretty traditional debate. If you were supportive of one candidate or the other, that's who you probably thought won. I don't think it moves the needle, if at all, for either candidate. And in our current environment, that is probably better for Joe Biden, because he didn't need to win. He just needed to not lose. And we'll see if it actually moves people. But I am skeptical. We shall see, because Election Day is only 11 days away. I'm recording this here on Friday, the 23rd of October. So we're 11 days out from election night. I'm going to pull up the 538 projections here real fast, and we will go through kind of their percentages and odds and things like that, and also kind of what to watch for on election night. So I have up their interactive tool here on 538. I would like to kind of disseminate it here a little bit, because at the outset, their initial projections here show Joe Biden with a 87% chance of winning, with an average electoral votes of 346, Trump with 12% chance, and 1% for that electoral college tie. But I think that is a little misleading to people when they say, oh, Joe Biden has 87% chance. This interactive tool, if you select a state to go for either candidate, it changes kind of their chance of winning and their electoral college votes. So what I'm going to do here first is fill in and select all of the safe states, the New York, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Louisiana, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, North and South Dakota, et cetera, et cetera. And when I get done clicking through all of these, I will show you, or tell you rather, kind of what or how the projections have changed, because it does move the needle a good bit more than maybe you were expecting. When you first look at that 87% chance number, you can see that maybe that's not the most accurate. So the states that I have not selected, that I consider not totally safe. So I've left Nevada, Arizona, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Georgia, Florida, Texas, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and New Hampshire. In addition to a couple of those congressional districts in Maine and Nebraska. So the second in Maine and Nebraska are both up for grabs as well. So if you fill in all of those, it moves to an 89% chance of Joe Biden winning. I'm going to fill in two states that I think Trump is going to win, regardless of how it goes. And if he lose, if Biden wins these states, it's a wipeout anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But I think Trump is going to win Texas and Ohio. if you put both of those in the red column, it not only changes the chance each candidate has at the other states kind of around it or with similar demographics, but it has the Joe Biden chance of winning at 80, down from 87, and Trump up to 18, with still a 2% chance of a tie. So that is a little closer to what I think the actual odds are. Basically a 1 in 5 chance for Trump of winning, and 4 in 5 for Biden. But if you are interested in how to watch election night, the earliest state to watch when it's called, because they will count fairly quickly, is the state of Florida. So if Joe Biden wins the state of Florida and it turns blue, his chances go up to over 99%. Of winning. The reason for that is if he's winning the senior vote in Florida, which makes up a big part of the population down there, then he is going to be president. Full stop. You can pretty much put it on the board. The reason I selected Florida is that their state law allows for ballots, the early ballots, the mail-in ballots, to be processed ahead of time. So a lot of people in Florida are using the mail-in ballots and early balloting system. We should have those results within 30 minutes of poll closing time in the panhandle. So Florida split, most of it's in the eastern coast or eastern standard time, but the panhandle kind of on the west portion of Florida is central time. So after the polls close in the central time portion of the state, the elections boards must reveal the early vote that they've tabulated within 30 minutes. So we will have a pretty solid idea early in the night of where Florida is going and therefore the election. Because if Joe Biden wins Florida and he can call it, or they tabulate all the election day votes within a couple hours of the central time poll closing, then we'll be able, the western half of the country might still be voting, but you can pretty much tell that it's pretty much over. Because if Florida goes blue, we're talking Florida Junior, Arizona will probably go blue. They have similar electorates, and Arizona is becoming even more blue than Florida. So you can tell if he wins Florida, he's going to win Arizona, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if election night comes and the early votes come in and then Donald Trump sweeps the kind of election day votes, the percentages of winning change to Joe Biden 61, and then Donald Trump jumps all the way up to 37. So early in the night, look for the results out of Florida. It is a huge swing one way or the other. It could be a night ender early, or it'll keep Trump and get him really into the game. Besides that, there are some states that can pre-process the ballots, other states that cannot. So states like Ohio, who are pre-processing, should have results pretty early on election night. If you have states that do a lot of mail anyway, like Arizona or Nevada, they might take a little longer even than usual. Particularly in the upper Midwest, some of those states can't start processing until election day, so some of those results might be a little ways later than you might be expecting. So that's kind of what to look for early on election night. Next week, I'm going to go over my final predictions of each state, kind of where I think the election goes. But If you're just ready for this election to be over, Florida is the state to watch early in the evening, along with North Carolina. Those kind of the two are absolutely necessary for Trump to win if he is to become reelected. And if Joe Biden wins one of those, it means he's probably going to become the next president of the United States. So thank you for tuning in to the Just Above Average podcast. I am your host, Dominic. Next time around, we will be making our final predictions for the president and for the U.S. Senate. So make sure to tune in next time on the Just Above Average podcast.